presuppose the detailed historical and theological study of his letters in debate with ongoing scholarship. I have tried to do this in The Climax of the Covenant, 1991 to 1992, Paul and the Faithfulness of God, 2013, the collection of essays entitled Pauline Perspectives, 2013, and the survey of modern, largely Anglophone research, Paul and His Recent Interpreters, 2015. But the biographer's questions are subtly different. We are searching for the man behind the texts. Like most historians, I try to include all relevant evidence within as simple a framework as possible. I do not regard it a virtue to decide ahead of time against either the Pauline authorship of some of the letters or the historicity of the Acts of the Apostles, on the grounds perhaps that Luke was writing long after the events, inventing material to fit his theology. Each generation has to start the jigsaw with all the pieces on the table and to see if the pieces can be plausibly fitted together to create a prima facie case. In particular, I make two large assumptions. First, a South Galatian address for Galatians. Second, an Ephesian imprisonment as the location of the prison letters. In the former, I am following, among many others, Stephen Mitchell, Anatolia, Land, Men and Gods in Asia Minor, Volume 2, The Rise of the Church. In the latter, I am indebted to many, including an older work by a St. Andrew's predecessor, George S. Duncan, Paul's Ephesian Ministry, A Reconstruction. I have found that these hypotheses make excellent sense of the historical, theological, and biographical data. References to primary sources are found in the notes at the end, but I have not, usually, cluttered things up with endless references to Acts itself. A small note on style. Despite protests, I keep the lowercase s in Holy Spirit because that conforms to my own translation, which I use here. Translations of Old Testament quotations are either my own or from the New Revised Standard Version. And particularly because when Paul wrote the Greek word pneuma, he did not have the option of a distinction between upper and lower case. His letters were in any case written initially to be read out loud. The word pneuma had to make its way in a world where it had different shades of philosophical and religious meaning without the help of visible markings. This itself makes an important point about Paul, who told and lived a Jesus-shaped Jewish message in a confused and contested world. I am grateful to several friends and colleagues who have read all or part of this book in draft and have offered suggestions, corrections, additions, and clarifications. They are not responsible for the errors that remain. I think particularly of Simon Kingston, Scott McKnight, Mike Bird, Mike Gorman, Max Botner, Craig Keener, John Richardson, Andrew Cowan, and Jonathan Sachs. The publishers have been uniformly helpful and encouraging. I'm thinking of Mickey Maudlin, Noel Chrisman, and their co-workers at Harper One, and Sam Richardson, Philip Law, and their co-workers at SPCK. I am once again grateful to my colleagues and students at St. Andrews for their encouragement and enthusiasm, and to my dear family for their unfailing support. This book is dedicated to the beloved memory of my late sister-in-law, Carrie Wright, who, like Paul, gave love and joy unstintingly to those around her. Tom Wright, Ascension Day 2017, St. Andrews. Introduction. Human culture has normally developed at the speed of a glacier. We moderns, accustomed to sudden changes and dramatic revolutions, need to remind ourselves that things have not usually worked this way. Slow and steady has been the rule. Occasional inventions that suddenly transform human life, for good or ill, the wheel, the printing press, gunpowder, the internet, are rare. That is why the events that unfolded 2,000 years ago in southeastern Europe and Western Asia are still as startling in retrospect as they were at the time. An energetic and talkative man, not much to look at and from a despised race, went about from city to city talking